97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wow, I get a produced intro, too. The voice guy and everything, Brad. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am well, Ryan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. And thanks for the invite. I get a couple of days here on the Annie Fry Show. And I got to say, that really threw me off. The first thing I thought of, did Ryan Wiggins cut a new version where he sings it? Or is that just obsolete now and they don't play that on Fridays anymore? Because I enjoyed the Wiggins singing version.
We still have that version.
Okay, good. It's necessary. Oh, there's so much to talk about on the show today. And before we get too far into it, I know we're streaming live, the Annie Fry Show. You can find it at all the usual places. But there's a YouTube poll that was just posted. Brad, what's the question today?
Well, today's question is are you buying the official narrative on Jeffrey Epstein? Yes or no? We got to be kind of secret about this because there are social media rules and I don't want us to get suppressed or anything like that. But do you buy it? Do you believe it? Cash Patel and Dan Bongino raised a bunch of eyebrows with some comments they had made earlier, and so I thought that'd be a great poll.
That would be good. We have some clips from that, too. It's so funny, the things that you have to do to not get kicked off of streams. Like on YouTube, for example, have you ever watched an old movie clip and they blur out the cigarette?
Yes.
And you're like, wait a minute, what is that? Oh, they blurred them smoking. That's a weird thing. But you realize that if YouTube algorithms pick that up, they could demonetize or kick the video off the stream. Now, the same thing is, you know, topics like pornography is a thing. You know, they kind of put asterisks and they change things around if they're discussing it, like it's a talk show and discussing it. And other things, too, like self-harm, for example. Mm-hmm. They're very careful of the way that they word it, because if they say something, they'll get kicked off the stream. I understand what you're doing here because of the Epstein topic. And yeah. I don't think, even back when it happened, I think immediately most people looked at it and said, what do you mean?
They raised a bunch.
I don't know if I believe that. We should play a couple of clips because this could inform some people as they go to vote. How about we do Dan Bongino first? Can we do clip number 4?
Yep. Well, it's going to play here in a second.
I'm just telling you what we see in the file. I just want to be crystal clear on this. I am not asking anyone to believe me. I'm telling you what's there and what isn't.
Right.
There is nothing in the file at this point on the Epstein case, and there's going to be a disclosure on this coming shortly. We are working through some. There is video. That is something the public does.
There's
not
video
know
of him killing himself.
No, not the actual act, but there the entire MCC Bay. It was only one camera. There were other. There's video that when you look at the video, and we will release, that's what's taken a while on this, we are working on cleaning it up to make sure you have an enhanced and we're going to give the original so you don't think there were any shenanigans. You're going to see there's no one there but him.
Right.
There's just nobody there. So I say to people all the time, if you have a tip, let us know. But there's no DNA, there's no audio, there's no fingerprints, there's no suspects, there's no accomplices, there's no tips, there is nothing. If you have it, I'm happy to see it. There's video clear as day. He's the only person in there and the only person coming out. You can see it.
Okay. Dan Bongino, a former talk show host. He was part of the Secret Service there for some years, too. Okay, let's go back and look at the whole Epstein and how things played out. I've always been skeptical of all that. And for a while there, it became its own meme, meaning that, hey, if you joked about it, you understood that everyone just assumed he didn't do it. Now it's kind of interesting because you have a different era of transparency inside of the second Trump term, where at first they're tackling the JFK files, but they also said they're going to get to things like some different 9/11 files that weren't released before. I think that's not going to look good for the Saudis and some of these people overseas. I think what you're also going to find is some of the calls for investigations into Iraq probably not going to be too flattering for what some people were really harking on, maybe some of the motivations behind why they acted the way they did. So we can also look at the Epstein files. They say they're going to open that up and post some things. RFK Jr., RFK files, rather. They already posted some of those. But there's a House committee that is investigating these things. So people are going to be called to testify the things not only they witnessed, but experts that have looked through the documents once they're released and try to give the American public a little idea of what's going on. So this is going to raise, I think, more concrete evidence that I think what a lot of other people assume. I don't know if everyone will always be satisfied knowing that Bongino came out and said there's no actual video evidence, that, you know, there's just one camera in that whole building or something, the one floor he was on. That doesn't seem right, too,
well,
the, right?
Well, that's what Bongino was saying in that clip. He goes, there are other cameras. There's just not a video of him actually committing the act to himself. That camera, that's the one that had the issue. But he's saying there's DNA evidence. There is nothing there that suggests that there was anybody else in that room with him.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Let's see what Kash Patel says, because he's got some comments on that, too. This is clip 5.
But there is a lot of conspiracy theories out there.
There are.
The Epstein thing, you dealt with Maria. You said, as far as you know, he killed himself.
I'm telling you, he killed himself.
The other thing on the internet is the Epstein files. What's the answer to that?
The answer to that is the same as everything else. I'm not going to withhold information from the American public ever. But I'm also not going to rush to get it out there in a format in which they can't rely on it. So on the Epstein matter or any other matters, we are diligently working on that. And it takes time to go through years of investigations, years of political maneuvering, and years of cover-up to get the American people what they deserve. And that's what I'm going to give them on everything.
Can I just say a few things? Even though I should trust what they're saying is honest, meaning that if they actually saw the things that they saw and they're giving an honest representation of the documents, materials that were presented to them, and they have seen everything, I should believe that. But why do I still not believe that? Why is it? Can I also say, how much money did Epstein have? He was a millionaire, right? He wasn't a billionaire.
Yeah, he was super wealthy.
He had an island. Now, the question is sometimes where this money come from. That's a big question, too. But let's put it this way. People that have endless amount of wealth also have endless amount of lawyers, and they don't give up hope that quick, I don't think. He seems like the type of guy that wouldn't have put an end to it so quickly. That, to me, I don't understand that either. There's a lot of questions to it. So maybe that's why the poll question's a good one. So people can go online to YouTube and vote now.
Yeah. Yeah. Go on YouTube, youtube.com/@AnnieFry. You leave us a comment telling us why you voted the way you voted. We want to hear your theories on the situation. It's one of those things that goes away. And when Annie's here, she talks about it because she wants to get to the bottom of not just what happened in that situation, but the whole Epstein list. We want all the Epstein files. We want to know everything. We want to get to the bottom of it and make sure that we have the truth in that, because really there are some, like you were saying, big and powerful people that were involved in this or allegedly involved in this, and it could have affected the way things happen in the government and the world. And honestly, we're talking about kids. Yeah. So we want the truth on it.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing what the poll results are there. All right, and we heard some of this with Brian Kilmeade on the program right before we went on the air, and he was discussing some of the different things when it comes to the Trump administration, in particular Elon Musk saying that his time has come to step aside, go do his regular job, his side hustle of helping the American people. It seems to be at the end of it. One interesting thing Kilmeade mentioned is that the staff that Elon put together will still be there looking for government waste. So Elon Musk is now pretty much done with Doge. So Musk's designation allowed him to work in government for 130 days while being exempt from some rules regarding ethics and conflicts of interest. That period was about to run out. Now he's gone. So interesting time. Government waste, and then they put this giant big bill together, and it seems like we're adding more waste into it, which is completely counterproductive. And one of the things that Kilmeade mentioned there that I totally disagree with, he's saying that when you're Elon Musk, you have to realize you have to convince and work with other people, and knowing that you're not always going to get your way. So that compromise is going to lead for you to sign on to things that you don't want to sign on to. I thought Republicans were all on board with cutting the budget and trying to get rid of some of this wasteful spending. Why are we negotiating with some of these people to add more wasteful spending? That was something I thought everyone going into this election, at least that voted Republican, were lockstep in. But that doesn't seem to be the case. They're trying to convince people that we have to allow some of this wasteful spending. I don't get it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, with all of that, you watch these bills and you watch these things go down. Do you think it was all for naught? Do you think this whole Elon thing was just wasted time?
No, I don't think the Elon thing is wasted time. I don't think that the big, beautiful bill was as big and as beautiful as it could have been, or as I wanted it to be. I think it was as big and as beautiful as it could have been, given the current circumstances in Congress. I get it. You're herding cats. You've got, with the Republican Party, you've got people that are very central, center of the road, you know, center right. And then you've also got your Thomas Massey's and your Chip Roy's. And what you've got to try to find is something that will get you enough votes. So make enough people happy that'll get you enough votes. And then you've got what? An 8-vote majority. And they were able to get this through with one.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, at least in the House. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Senate, a whole different thing. And part of the conservative Republicans, and now they're going to have to come up with some compromise, at least on the Senate side. I'm a big fan of Rand Paul. I think he's right on when it comes to our looming debt problems that have been looming for, I don't know, how long now? 2 decades? I mean, it's been a long time coming. It basically, after 2000, we've seen, you know, steps turn to bunny hops, turn to leaps, turn to sprinting as we continue to raise up the national debt. And then COVID hit. And, you know, I think they hopped on a bullet train. They're still moving in that direction. So when you find the percentage of spending that we have based on the amount of money coming in versus the amount of money coming out, and we're looking at that number continue to rise even after the COVID years, I think a lot of financial experts are saying that we're past the COVID times. We have to reel it back.
Yeah.
We're not reeling it back. I have a hard time trusting that politicians in the future are going to all of a sudden start to be responsible, because a big part of this is, yeah, we anticipate more money coming in the future, which will make up for this. We anticipate more cuts in the future, which will make up for this, because when they project these, you know, $3.5 to $4 trillion that'll be added to the deficit, the big defense to that is it'll be made up down the line, because, you know, you're looking a decade out. And when you look that far out, there's going to be additional cuts. We just can't get it all done right now. Who believes that? Like, who believes all of a sudden they're going to wake up and be responsible fiscally? I don't think anyone does. So unless you just do it right now, there's no reason for me to believe you'll ever catch up to that, you know, $3 trillion, $4 trillion number in order to make this balanced. I don't think it'll ever happen unless you just right off the bat make it balanced.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm of the mindset that I think that it's something that you can work toward. I look at it as steering a ship. You can't just spin it on a dime. You've got to wean people off of the, you know, entitlement programs that have been put out there. It's really, really hard to get people, once you've given them something, to then take it away without a lot of blowback and all that sort of stuff. And I think you got to wean people off of that and cut it slowly, but definitely cut it. You know, I know that I forget what the exact number was, but they cut something like $1.9 trillion of spending out of it, but we're still like $500 billion going into debt each year with this new budget. So I think that you can do it, but I don't think that you can rip it off so fast. That would be such a shock to the system of the American people that things wouldn't go well. And then what you would end up with is a midterm where the Republicans get wiped out. Trump's presidency is essentially over, because what the Democrats are going to do is just launch a bunch of investigations into him and lawsuits and stuff like that. So he won't be able to get anything done. And then once a Democrat returns back to the White House, what they will do is they will add back all of that spending. It'll all immediately go back. And so maybe you saved spending for a year, maybe two, but it'll go immediately back once Democrats get back in charge. You really have to shift that Overton window.
The investigation side and the sandbagging, I mean, that was his first term, and he somehow got past that. I mean, there was, all things considered, everything that was thrown at him, everything in the kitchen sink, he still had some pretty big things that happened during that first term. We may have to talk more about this, because I know we have to go to break, and Hans von Spakovsky, I think he joins us after the break, Brad, is that right?
Yep, that's right.
This is a big one. This is a story about the debt and Elon Musk and all these other things when it comes to the future Doge cuts. That's not going away. We'll have to pick that up later, but with Hans after the break, we want to talk about these Harvard lawsuits. He's a legal mind. I want to see what he thinks about Harvard suing the Trump administration trying to get some less money going Harvard's way, which I support cutting money for Harvard. So we'll continue the conversation with Hans von Spakovsky coming up after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry on the Manny Fry Show. Don't go anywhere on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry, and we'll be here the next couple of days. It's more like the Manny Fry Show. I love that the voice guy has prepared that for Brad and I. Joining us now is a senior legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation, Hans von Spakovsky. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Hans.
Ryan, thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on, but in particular, you're a great legal mind. And looking at what's going on between Harvard and the Trump administration contends, all right, Harvard, if you're going to harass Jews on your campus, then maybe you shouldn't be getting federal money. Harvard says, no, we should be allowed to do that. So they're fighting back at the Trump administration. That might be too general in the way I'm portraying this, but I wanted to talk about these Harvard lawsuits. Is there anything that stands out in these lawsuits to you?
Well, what stands out to me is how, frankly, shocking it is at Harvard having done absolutely nothing to stop the rampant anti-Semitism that infected its campus, its faculty, that led to the harassment, even physical assaults of Jewish students. And when the federal government finally comes in and wants to do something about it, what do? They file suit. And remember, all of this was going on during the Biden administration, and what did the Justice Department or the Biden administration do about it? They refused to do anything about it. Mm-hmm.
And part of that, was it just more acceptable then? The answer is no. So you finally have someone that's doing something about it when it comes to the Trump administration, saying that we can't treat human beings like this. You can't, on a public university campus, well, I guess not public, but at least the case of Harvard, you can't do this on a college campus where you have people threatening physical violence against someone because they're Jewish. And right, to say that, okay, we're going to give you a chance to clean this up. We gave other universities a chance to clean this up. The other universities did clean it up because they agreed this is not the right thing to be doing. I don't know why Harvard's digging into the sand on something like this. Like, it's a giant constitutional protection that they should be able to harass Jews. I don't understand that.
Well, I tell you, what people ought to realize is the history, the frankly bad history of Harvard University. This is like a repeat of what Harvard did. Harvard is infamous for, in the 1920s, the president of Harvard, this has all been documented, the president of Harvard decided there were too many Jewish students getting accepted at the university. They were doing extremely well. They had outstanding academic credentials, and he didn't like that. And that's he put in measures to specifically try to exclude Jewish students from getting accepted. Have you heard the term all the universities use called the holistic admissions process, you know, one where they try? That was invented by Harvard in the 1920s to keep Jewish students off the campus. And that's the kind of behavior. Look, the other thing that occurs to me as a, you know, an everyday American out in the provinces is, why is Harvard even getting any federal money? They have an endowment of over $53 billion. I don't know. My kids didn't go to Harvard. I don't have any. None of my brothers or sisters' kids went to Harvard. Why is my tax money going to this elite private university with a $53 billion endowment? I don't think they ought to be getting any federal money.
Hey, Hans, this is Brad. Real quick, the argument that I'm seeing, and actually we've got the YouTube live chat poll, live chat going on here, and I'm seeing it from some of the left-leaning members of our chat. They're wondering, well, what is it about this? How is this not a violation of the First Amendment?
Because discrimination against students, including allowing and encouraging a hostile physical environment. Look, there's video out there of Jewish students being attacked on that campus. That is a violation of the 1965 Civil Rights Act. You cannot engage in that kind of behavior in the educational setting. That is discrimination, blatant discrimination. And under federal law, if you as a university violate the Civil Rights Act and other education acts, you are not entitled to federal funds.
Mm. Can I point out something else? And this goes back to the Biden administration, which kind of shows the pattern that Harvard has. If you remember, one of the controversies with Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson was that, you know, she was associated with Harvard. She was part of their board of overseers. And part of their game plan was, hey, we're Harvard. We have too many Asians. So we need to discriminate those of Asian descent because we should be allowed to do this sort of thing. So I think Harvard has a pattern of discriminating against minorities, let it be Asians or Jews or whatever it may be. And finally, someone called them out for it, saying this is not normal. It happens to be the Trump administration. So why is it that Harvard feels like in their, you know, keep in mind, they want to be looked at as the top institution in the world, that they should be immune from discrimination laws? Because the Supreme Court, yeah, I know that Supreme Court Justice Brown Jackson decided that she didn't have to sit in that one because there was a conflict of interest. But still, the Supreme Court didn't like the idea when it came to admissions and Asians. So why would they be okay with this?
Well, because, and I looked very intensely when this case was up, the one you're talking about, I looked very intensely at the, I knew the lawyers in that case. I looked at and reviewed the discovery that they did, the depositions of Harvard administrators, the physical evidence, documents they've had. The Harvard administration, they believe there's nothing wrong with that kind of discrimination. That this is a matter of ideology. They think that they were doing the right thing by discriminating, for example, against Asian American kids. They thought there was nothing wrong with it. And remember, when the Supreme Court issued that decision against Harvard saying, no, you cannot discriminate, that's a violation of the Civil Rights Act, Joe Biden actually came out and gave a speech and encouraged Harvard and other universities to ignore the Supreme Court. And the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, which is supposed to enforce that law, not only refused to go after Harvard, actually went to the Supreme Court and supported Harvard's claim that they ought to be able to discriminate.
I look at that and I think to myself, you can substitute, you know, you can say these people of Asian descent that were discriminated when it came to admissions. But to me, it opens up the door of all these other areas where they could be discriminating. It might not just be admissions, but me logically would be thinking to myself, it's probably stretches way past that. Then we see it on the campuses in the way that they treated Jewish members of their community, the ones that they were allowing to be harassed on their own campus. Can I play a clip for you from Harvard law professor Lawrence Tribe? And let me get your reaction to this, Brad. This is clip number one.
Well, it's really hard, Lawrence, to know where to begin. He's obviously unhinged. He has no idea what he's talking about. He just thinks that slinging around, frankly, BS about the people at Harvard and other institutions will somehow substitute for taking the law into account.
All right. So basically criticizing the Trump administration calls his attacks on schools unhinged. What do you think of that?
Well, I suggest that he's maybe gotten too old to watch the actual videos or to read the complaints filed by Jewish students, for example, who, as I said, were intimidated, harassed, attacked. Look, I know of a professor at one of these universities. He's a friend of a friend who is Jewish, who's had to hire private security to protect himself on campus. And because the university won't do it. That's the kind of misbehavior that we have been seeing at places like Columbia and Harvard University. And for the professor to try to deny it's happening, well, he's not living in the reality of Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Mm. When we just look at this case, just based on what's written So when you look at some of the different legal standings leading into this, how do you think this will play out?
Harvard has no constitutional right to federal funding. So, yeah, you know, they're going to get friendly judges in the Boston area, I'm sure, to rule in their favor initially. But that's exactly what happened in the admissions discrimination case. You know, Harvard was sued. The lower court judge there refused to go against the very powerful Harvard University. So did the Court of Appeals. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and Harvard lost. That was a place at the U.S. Supreme Court where all their money and all their powerful alumni could not change the results.
Yeah. Can I tell you something else that drives me crazy? I saw those reports, and I think it was the New York Post today. They were showing some of the salaries of these professors, and there was one professor, I think they were the seventh or eighth highest paid person on the campus. One professor makes $1 million a year. Why are we giving money to Harvard if they can afford to pay professors $1 million a year? They don't need money if that's the case. And this is so ridiculous to me that I know it's a matter of principle for Harvard. And I will say this, what principle are they standing on? The principle to say they have the ability and they should have the unchecked ability to harass minorities. I don't understand that principle.
Well, if they want to be able to do that, it's wrong under, like I said, under the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and fine, then don't take any federal money. Don't expect all of us in the rest of the country to have our tax money going to you when you've got a $53 billion endowment.
Right. So, Hans, what have you been working on lately? You have a podcast now.
You know, I actually have started a podcast. It's called Case in Point. And our latest episode is going to get released this afternoon, and I interview one of the senior policy analysts at the White House. So this is an aide to President Trump. So I got some pretty interesting people.
So the podcast is called Case in Point, and it's available wherever you get your podcast. Of course, with the Heritage Foundation, you write articles, and I see them. And I got to tell you, Hans, you are such a great legal mind. I'm glad that you are expanding into the podcast world. I can't wait to hear this because this will be, I haven't actually got to listen to the show yet. So this will be my first. So I'm looking forward to it. Case in Point, wherever you get your podcasts. And Hans, if people want to look you up online, where else can they go?
They can go to heritage.org/case in point. Very easy.
Oh, that's a real easy spot to find it. Hans von Spakovsky. Wow. Let's see how this plays out. I know there's going to take time and all these legal issues take a long time to go through the courts. It must be hard, at least in modern time, for you to keep up because it seems like the Supreme Court has been taking on a lot of emergency cases as of late. So it's like before you used to have a couple of years leading into a trial or a case. And now it's like, man, they crank them out. It seems like every other week there's something new. So
It is. I just got a list of temporary stays. They just issued 8 cases just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's lightning speed for these court cases. Hans von Spakovsky, thank you so much for joining us here today. We really appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
And go to the Heritage Foundation's website or just do a quick search wherever you get your podcast and look for Case in Point. I'm going to have to download that here soon when it drops. Brad? That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Hans, such a great mind for this. I love him as a guest. He is so good.
Well, he's so good, and he has such a deep knowledge of the Constitution and constitutional law, you know, and I think it's really, I thought it was great the way he pointed it out. It's like Harvard doesn't actually have the right to the money that they've been getting from the government. So, and then you go around, you mess around, you violate people's civil rights, and this is what happens. So,
yeah. All right. Coming up after the break, a few things I do want to talk about. And there's one where Marco Rubio is talking about how the United States will start revoking visas from Chinese students. Let's discuss that, among other things. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Go vote in our YouTube poll, which is going on right now. Big question on the YouTube poll. Are you buying the official narrative on Jeffrey Epstein? Ooh, we'll get the results at the end of the show. It's the Manny Fry Show. I'm Ryan Recker filling in on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back. You know, thinking about the interview with Hans von Spakovsky there, Brad, maybe this is something. you have, generally speaking, a mindset when if you're far left that you hate billionaires, you hate the wealthy. Mm-hmm. You know, no one should be able to accumulate wealth more than what you have. And once you get to a certain point, they want to tax you 100%, essentially use the government to go in and just take your assets because you don't deserve it. You didn't. They do this whole way of Obama thinking, which is you didn't build that, right? So the backs of all these other workers, so you don't actually deserve all this that you've worked for your entire life, whatever it may be. So they hate the billionaires. They hate even millionaires, multimillionaires, things like that, just because, you know, they've accumulated wealth. Why is it that they then are cool with places like Harvard, who have billions and billions of dollar endowment, and they don't feel the same about Harvard, but they're perfectly okay with the United States government continuing to fund them, even though they've got $50+ billion sitting there in the bank? It just seems so hypocritical. I don't understand why they don't turn on Harvard. And this is one of those moments where conservatives and liberals could actually be in agreement.
One, I think it goes back to, I mean, at a more cynical level, it goes back to who are they supporting? Who does Harvard support? And what type of ideals does Harvard support? And if even a millionaire or a billionaire, like in the case of J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, billionaire, as long as they're espousing the correct principles, they won't come after them. You're protected class. We're not going to go after you. You're doing our thing. But I think the other side of it is, too, it goes back to, like, what do they call it? Intersectionality, and how there are classes of people that are oppressors, and then there are classes of people that are oppressed. And then they look at that and they say, if anybody has a disproportionate success, they must be oppressing somebody. So you look at Harvard, and because Harvard is going after a group that leftists believe are disproportionately successful, i.e. Jews and Israel, they will support the other people who they view as oppressed. So Harvard looks like they're leaning their support behind the Palestinians and that. And so the leftists are like, well, then we're going to support Palestine. And I think there's one more element to it, and it's Donald Trump said that was wrong, therefore I'm going to say this is right. So I think it's those things.
I would like to know who they think Taylor Swift is oppressing, because she's a billionaire too, isn't she? Like, with her music and stuff. Who's she oppressing?
But remember with Taylor Swift, what are her politics? She lines up with the left, so they leave her alone.
You know, it was funny because there was a thought that she perhaps could have some conservative views because of where she grew up and how she grew up. And as soon as something like that was even theorized, it's like they realized it was bad for business. She's like, better separate myself from that. But I will cling on to other more liberal views because that seems like it is just fine. But she's got a lot of money and they don't go after her with pitchforks, I guess. So... She hasn't been to space yet. I guess they would. I mean, the minute she goes to space, they'll turn on her. I can guarantee that. Marco Rubio says the U.S. will aggressively revoke visas of Chinese students. And a move, and I'm getting this right up from the Hill, but pretty much every news agency is writing this up. U.S. Department will work with the Department of Homeland Security to revoke the visas. It will be revised visa criteria to enhance scrutiny of all future visa applicants from the People's Republic of China and Hong Kong. According to a statement from Rubio, the whole idea is you're going to be bringing in people that don't like the United States. So they may be sympathetic or maybe on the side of or on behalf of the Chinese government, which is not a good thing. And what we found is an increase in Chinese spies that come in through the school system. I mean... What was the one guy, Sowell? Who's the dude that was dating the Chinese spy?
Oh, Eric Swalwell.
Eric Swalwell. Yeah. He wasn't just dating. I think they were, you know, what do they say? Shagging? Is that the proper term?
It's a term. I don't know if it's proper.
I think that's what was pretty much universally agreed on, even though he does not admit it. But there was something going on there.
Yeah. Is what do they call it? I think they call it a honeypot trap.
Honeypot trap. That's, so you put your hand.
That's the special agent undercover lingo for that kind of person. Is this girl that you know flirts with a guy, at the very least, flirts with a guy to get information from him.
Right. So looking at different countries, and sometimes these students have allegiances to those foreign entities, and in some cases, they're entities that hate the United States. and they may be working on behalf of those foreign entities. Is it wrong to tell them they can't come over here on a student visa just because they're young? Should they get some sort of leeway that we just need to believe they're here for the education? But the Trump administration says, no, you know, education or not, if mm-hmm. you can't sever your ties with these communist parties that are yeah. out there to get the United States, then you can't have your education here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with that. Why would we educate or provide education for people who are going to go back then and potentially, as our competitors, use that education against us? Hmm. You know, if the best education in the world is in the United States, which I think the evidence suggests that it is, because that's where everybody sends their kids to get an education. There's like Harvard and Yale, and then like I guess in England you've got Oxford, but outside of that, like where else do people send their kids to get a huge, awesome education? It's in the United States. And so why would we support a group that's purported goal is to take our place, to supplant yeah. us as the world power? I'm not for that. And then on top of that, you've got people that are basically spies coming into the United States.
Oh, not basically, literal spies. I mean, they were caught spying. Like, there's a very famous one up here in Michigan, University of Michigan. There were these students that were going to these military bases and literally spying on them and sending the results back. And then when they got caught, they tried to flee the country. Some of them did. They were caught in foreign airports and brought back here. So, I mean, there's no question about it. There's some of that is going on. I don't know how often it happens, but we can say this. In the comment from China, their Minister of Foreign Affairs told reporters, and that person's name is Mao Ning, which is very similar to the basketball player, but not the same person, in case you're thinking it, said that the Trump administration of using national security and ideology as a pretext for the unreasonable decision which seriously damaged the legitimate rights and interests of Chinese students and disrupted the normal cultural exchanges between the two countries, added the political and discriminatory practice of the U.S. has exposed the lies of the so-called freedom that the U.S. has always advertised. So, hey, we're anti-freedom now because we don't want Chinese spies to come into our universities. That's quite the way to spin it, I got to say. I think Harvard would be proud to have them as lawyers.
Masters of spin. Holy cow. You don't sit there and it's like, oh, you guys don't even believe in your freedom principles. And it's like, you have no room to talk. You have no room to talk. If somebody disagrees with the party line in China, you disappear. You disappear. Yeah, okay. Nobody knows what happens to you. Don't talk to me about freedom. And no, we're not going to help you spread that nonsense around the world.
No, I know exactly what happens to them. They go into a camp and they start making Nike shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd sell them for pennies. And then, the tariffs kind of screwed some of that up still. But that's what happens. So here in the United States, we understand that China is not a friendly country. We understand that they don't have our best interests. I don't know how you would be able to vet these different visas because how do you know they're telling the truth or not? I mean, there could be people that honestly want this education and this is their dream. And would you be able to differentiate? And part of it is Marco Rubio saying that we need more scrutiny so we could tell the difference between those that are coming for an education and those that are not. And until we have that criteria and that system in place, then maybe we just don't do it, right? That we got to be able to weed out people that are out there just to not get an education.
Right.
And I to me, this is not super controversial. I understand that there's going to be instances where you're going to get it wrong. And, you know, I get that. But what are the big universities in China? Do they have any? I couldn't name any.
They do, but I wouldn't know what they are.
I wonder what that's like to go to college in China. Like, could you imagine like all the protests that we see on college campuses here in the United States? I mean, it's like every other day there's a college protest that's going on. And, you know, they want everyone to listen to them. What do you think it's like? Is it just like they walk single file quietly to classes?
No.
Like, how does that work?
No, I would imagine it looks like a modern, you know, United States college campus in the sense that you go in there and then you're fed the indoctrination line and then you leave. But other than that, you're kids and you do kids things that are acceptable within the Chinese Communist Party. I don't think that they're standing in front of tanks anymore. So,
no. Oh, and they never have. If you try to Google it, they'll tell you.
Yeah, that, at least that didn't happen. That picture's fake.
That didn't happen. Trying to get their knockoff AI to try to admit these things. And when they realize their error of admitting it, boy, does that shut down pretty quick. I don't know any. Have you ever heard of one person in your entire life who said, you know, I've always wanted to go to college in China? Like, have you heard of anything going the other way?
No. No, I haven't.
I've heard of people like go to England over in the UK. Yeah. Was it Oxford and some? And I even knew some broadcasters. They wanted to work for the BBC, so they went to school overseas, and they followed their dream that way. I understand that, and I think there's some, you know, foreign places where there might be some really interesting or world-renowned physicists or mathematicians or artists that they have to go and experience it, and they can only be there to experience it. I can't name one person in my entire life who ever once considered going to school in China. Like, I'm just going to give up my citizenship and then go study there because I know what would happen to them. They wouldn't be seen again. They would be thought of as a spy. I mean, wouldn't they? The Chinese government would treat these kids like spies, just like the United States is suspicious of these students coming from China.
Yeah.
I think that Marco Rubio is onto something here. Can I just, this is kind of adjacent to this, I think Marco Rubio is maybe the biggest rising star in the Republican Party right now.
Fantastic.
I think that heads and shoulders above any other Republican when it comes to planting their flag to, you know, become the nominee for the next president. Yeah. I think even more than J.D. Vance, that he has made such a big impact, Marco Rubio, I got to tell you, I've been so impressed with everything he's doing, and it shattered all my expectations for him. Because, you know, Marco for a while kind of was like a punchline. Like, oh, he's the guy that reached for the water off stage. And, you know, he had his chance when he was young, but now he's not young anymore. But man, has he made an impact these first, you know, 5-6 months in the Trump presidency.
He has done a phenomenal job. Every time he says something, every time he goes before Congress, every time he goes before the Senate, every time he institutes a policy, when he engages with the media, he's got a clear defined goal, and he knows what he's talking about too. So he knows what he's trying to convey. He knows the information that he's trying to do it. And then he does it, and he's implementing great policy. Yeah. I mean, I'm 100% on board with what you're saying there. A rising star, probably, you know, if not overtaking J.D. Vance, at least pushing him for possible nomination in 2028.
Yeah.
Annie's a huge fan. She loves what he has to say and what he's doing. And, like, the thing that I like the most about it is because before this, you were talking about this a little bit, he had this era of rhino about him. Fair or not, people looked at him that way. And based on what he's been doing so far, he's really just kind of, you know, wiped all of that away. He is showing that he is actually America first, which I really like.
Yep. We don't have time for this. Maybe we get to this in another segment. But speaking of, you know, immigration and such, there's this AP story, Trump administration revoking permission for a 4-year-old Mexican girl who receives life-saving medical care from a California hospital to stay in the country, attorneys for the family said on Wednesday. It's always more in depth than what the headline says, but we might have to discuss this because kind of the idea, you have these Chinese students that are coming into the country and they may be working on behalf of their Communist Party leaders, as in reporting back and spying on Americans. And that's a real threat. I mean, it happens all the time. Instances like this are a little bit less cut and dry when it comes to revoking visas. And maybe we talk about that a little bit later too. When we come back after the break, there was a moment on CNN that was like the biggest mess I think I've ever heard on broadcast. And I got to say, I've heard a lot of messes, and this was a mess. Can we play some of that audio after the break, Brad? It's so good. I got to tell you, this is modern day CNN. The Larry Kings of the world are gone, and this is what CNN has become. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.